Yes.
Excellent. Thank you all for your time and for being here to conduct the business. First item on the agenda is public comment. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the Planning District Commission this afternoon? Very good. Hearing none, we will dispatch of that. Next item, the minutes of December 21st, 2020 Zoom meeting were included in your information. Were there any changes or issues related to those minutes? Hearing none, we will accept them and approve them as presented. And we'll jump right into reports. I'm elated to tell you that I have absolutely no report for you this afternoon, and we'll bounce past to Bonnie.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. It's good to see you all. It's been almost a year since we met in person. I believe it was last February was the last time we met in person. That's just so hard to believe. Hopefully, in one of our very near future meetings, we'll be able to meet in person. But until then, this is now the new normal. So in your packet, you received, there was a handout about the COVID-19 Recovery Local Cares funding. And I just wanted to briefly go over that with you. As most of you know, back in the summer, local governments received funding through the CARES Act. The funding came through the state and it came to each locality, each city and county based on their population. Our localities, our five cities and our five counties got $26 million in the first round. And then about a month later, they got another $26 million. So we had a total of $52 million that came to our region. And we at the PDC worked with each of our localities and helped them track that funding and how they were using it. The money had to be used for COVID-related expenses, and that was a pretty broad definition. It could not be used to cover lost revenue or lost taxes that local governments were experiencing. It was pretty specific that they had to show that these funds were being used for COVID-related expenses. And you can see in the chart we handed out how much each one of the localities received and a compilation of how they used it. Most of the localities used the bulk of their money for PPE and cover payroll costs for public safety personnel. Out of the $52 million that we received in our region, almost 60% of those funds went for those type of expenses. The next largest area where local governments spent their money was on public safety modifications, such as cleaning services, social distancing modifications in their buildings, etc. And then the rest of it was spread out among the other eligible categories. All 10 localities set up business recovery grants for their small businesses and their nonprofits. About $4 million out of that $52 million went to serve small businesses. I think there were 473 businesses that were served with this local CARES program. And then about $2 million went to serve the nonprofits, and there were about 70 nonprofits that were served. We tracked this information over the course of about 9 months. Those funds had to be expended by December 30th, which was a real challenge for our local governments because, you know, they didn't have time to really plan for projects, you know, such as broadband, because the money had to be spent in that very short period of time. It has since been extended that deadline for another year, but our local governments had already spent their money by the time they got the notice that it had been expended. I want to recognize Grace Blanchard on our staff. She worked with all the local governments and and track that information for them and compile this information. We've also shared that with all of the local governments, the managers, the city managers, county administrators, and they've also shared that with their city councils and their board of supervisors. But there is a possibility that there could be some more local CARES money coming if there's another stimulus package at the federal level, although I understand funding for local and state governments might be on the chopping block. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But if anybody has any questions or wants any more detailed information about the local CARES money that came to your local government specifically, we're glad to drill down a little bit deeper and show how that money was spent in your local jurisdiction. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's always such a dynamic tension to slash your budget substantially and then get, as a region, $52 million to spend on something else, and especially when there are other needs that are going by the wayside. So, but thankfully, we have those dollars to circulate in our community. I'd like to address the next item on the agenda, the Treasurer's Report. Terry Short, I think I saw you out there.
Yep, I'm here. Good evening. Not too much to report. The financials presented in the packet are the same that were presented at our last meeting over a month ago. I understand that our closing, our December books have been delayed by staff turnover and invoices that we've not yet received. January, we submitted our final reimbursement request for work completed on the all hazards plan update, which is currently our largest receivable. And then lastly, we expect to submit our cost allocation plan to VDOT in the next several weeks. As a reminder, VDOT is the organization responsible for approving our indirect and fringe rates. So with that, if there are any questions that I might be able to answer or can turn over to Lee, offer that with a look for a motion for approval of the Treasury report.
Thank you, Terry.
This is Carolyn Dahl. I move to approve the Treasurer's Report.
I'll second.
George, for a second.
Yes.
Good work. Good work. Any discussion? Terry, one quick question. I heard you say these are December numbers and the same as were presented in December. But staff turnover, Lee, do you want to speak to what transpired there?
Sure. Ethan, who was our previous fiscal technician, has accepted another job in his planned departure. Of course, we were expecting, but Patricia Lancey has joined us, and she hit the ground running. Speaking from experience, is drinking out of a fire hose, not a water hose. So we're moving forward.
Terrific. Thank you. Bye. Pass along our welcome to Patricia and glad she's here to support you. Any other questions from members? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of the Treasury report, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Before we go to Dr. Cornegay's report, I did want to recognize Laura Dent, who's joining us for the first meeting. You can be prepared for the no longer than 5-minute presentation of your sordid history and what brought you here today. Just kidding. But welcome. We're glad you're here and representing the city of Harrisonburg. If you have any questions, you can see a wealth of experience and knowledge in your viewing screen, and look forward to your contributions on the PDC. And I saw Pam Carter. I don't think I've met Pam before, so welcome, Pam. Glad you're with us as well. Next item is Dr. Laura Cornegay, who's been experiencing a lot of sleepless nights, I'm sure, in the past year with talk about drinking from the fire hose. I'm sure that there was a book handed to you when you took the position as the director for the Central Shenandoah Health District, what to do in the event of a pandemic. And you just pull that off and follow the game plan. But we're elated for you to be with us today and look forward to your remarks. Dr. Cornegay, if you want to take it away.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thanks for having me this evening. As you all know, our major focus at Public Health over the last couple weeks has been the vaccine effort. You know, that's a really good news, and the light at the end of the tunnel for ending this pandemic is getting our population vaccinated. The other good news is that people are really interested in getting vaccinated, which is terrific. Unfortunately, the interest in vaccines has kind of been outstripped by inventory at this point. So that's been probably our biggest challenge to vaccine efforts, is just not enough inventory to meet the demand. At this point, Virginia is getting approximately 105,000 vaccines a week from the federal government. The president announced last week that we should get a 16% increase in that allotment, and hopefully we'll see that soon. We didn't see it in this week's distribution as yet. The way the state divides out that pot is by population. So Central Shenandoah Health District has about 300,000 people, which is about 3 to 4% of Virginia's population. So we get approximately 3,400 vaccine doses each week to allocate throughout our very large district that consists of, you know, 5 cities, 5 counties, about 2,500 square miles. Our current work is kind of split in half, with half of our efforts being in the 1B essential worker group. Over the past week, we've worked particularly on K through 12 education. Prior to knowing that our vaccine allocations were going to be significantly limited, we had set up on-site clinic opportunities at all of our public K through 12 schools. So we went ahead and continued with those efforts, and we've hit several of the jurisdictions already. That's worked out quite well. We elicited help from our school nurses and also from EMS vaccinators in the area, and those efforts are going quite well. The other 50% of our efforts are really towards people who are greater than age 65 and people 16 to 64 with chronic medical conditions. As you all are aware, registration for individual vaccines was also a challenging aspect to the rollout of the vaccines. I think the expectation was that we wouldn't get into the 1B category quite as quickly as we did, so we didn't have a statewide registry open. So the district kind of built their own survey in order to get people in the queue for vaccines. There will be a statewide survey that's actually much like the one that we introduced at the district. It uses the same platform, REDCap, secure platform, has many of the same questions. And I think we'll make the whole system a little less confusing for people at a state level. Having 35 health districts do things a little bit differently, you know, leads to a lot of confusion, especially when the health districts are connected by these invisible barriers. So I think that will help a good bit. We have been looking here, there, and everywhere for additional vaccine at the state level. One of my fellow health directors, Danny Abulo, was tapped by the governor a couple of weeks ago to be the vaccine coordinator for the state. And I think that's been really helpful for us. Danny has a lot of local perspective. He's been a health director for at least a decade in the Richmond area, and he forms a great connection between kind of our Richmond colleagues and the localities. So he's really got things running in the right direction. Some of the efforts that he made in order to get vaccine out a little bit quicker was asking a lot of the health systems who seemed to have a fair supply of vaccine that hadn't been used yet, to mobilize their second doses as first doses. So that's some of the action that's been going on within the last few weeks. And also to redistribute vaccine from places where it may be sitting for more than a week and get it into public health's hands. So we were able to get access to 1,400 additional doses this week. We're also able to kind of toggle together about 900 doses to do a nice event on Saturday, sort of at the spur of the moment at the Rockingham County Fairgrounds. It reached 900, very grateful, greater than 65-year-olds. We've really built, I think over the 6 or 7 weeks that we've been in the vaccine business, a great infrastructure, and a lot of community partners are going to be able to help us really be a well-oiled machine going forward. We have venues for high throughput vaccine clinics. Our district has been using EMS vaccinators for the last 5 years, so we have a really strong relationship with EMS partners, and they're great force extenders for us. So I think once the vaccine inventory gets rolling, we'll be really well positioned to get that, you know, out and into the arms of the people who need it. At this point, like I said, our inventory is somewhat limited, so we've not been able to disperse vaccine as widely as we'd hoped. Once vaccine inventory is improved, we'll certainly be working with pharmacies throughout the area. Our retail pharmacies have all signed up to be vaccination sites. Many of our private practices, large and small, have also signed up to be vaccination sites. We just have to have vaccine to feed to them. So we've had some, like I said, some bumps in the road. The big challenge at this point is the inventory, but we've got the structure and the manpower there to get vaccines out on a bigger basis. So, like I said, I've built been able to do, I think, some really good things over the last few weeks. So I'd be happy to answer. I'm sure y'all have a lot of questions. I'd be happy to field any specific questions that you may have.
Dr. Cornegay, I'll start while the queue builds up.
Sure.
What's the lead time for you to know how many vaccinations you're going to have? And also, at this point, what's the queue for people that want to be vaccinated? Because I know I completed through my church, there was a link and put in your information to determine when my opportunity would be. Does that fall into your world? And then how is that organized?
Sure. Yeah, that queue will fall into our world at this point. We don't have a feedback loop to tell people, you know, when we'll be able to serve them. We have a very long queue. We're trying to approach it, you know, in the order in which it was received to the best of our ability. But the 1B population alone in our district, and really in most districts in the state, represents about 50% of the population. So we're looking at about 150,000 people, you know, who are now eligible for vaccines. So there's a lot of people to serve. We're trying to do them in a, you know, in an equitable order, but it could be, you know, weeks or months, you know, to get through that waiting list. I think with the central registration process that the state's trying to set up, I'm hopeful that they may be able to introduce some kind of feedback loop, because I think it's very frustrating for folks, you know, when they sign up on a form, they don't get a recognition that it's been received, and then they're not really sure where they are in the scheme of things. So hopefully our, you know, the state partners can help with getting a little more feedback back to the community. One good source of information that we have been able to build over the last couple of weeks is our district website. We also have a weekly newsletter that kind of tells people, you know, what we've done that past week, how many vaccines public health is distributing, and kind of the priority groups that we're looking at. So that, you know, those, that website and our newsletter that you can subscribe to are good sources of local information.
And Dr. Corrigan, when you say there are 150,000 in the 1B, for so to speak, are there 10,000 people, 50,000 people, or 100,000 people that have already responded to your survey wanting to get the vaccine?
I'd have to go back to our folks who are putting all that data together to get a number for you. And 150,000 is probably an entire, you know, 1B category. At this point, our focus for 1B is on the, you know, the greater than age 65 and the 16 to 64 with chronic medical conditions. And then the first three tiers of the essential workers, kind of stopping at that K through 12 level. The next tiers are pretty big ones for our district that include food, agriculture, grocery. We have a whole lot of industry that kind of fits into that next category. So that's going to be a big job as well.
Just hope that people do want to get vaccinated. Nothing worse than having the inventory and nobody showing up.
Right. No. And I think this is a good problem to have, because, you know, when we started, we weren't sure what the uptake was going to be, you know, for the vaccine. But we've had good uptake amongst the general public, for sure.
What other questions? Yes, Carolyn.
Well, great. I hadn't even said anything, but you knew I was going to ask a question. I know that there's been discussions about immunocompromised and immunosuppressed folks, but I don't see that listed specifically. I saw, you know, diseases like diabetes and that kind of thing. But what about those folks that might be not elderly, but would be younger people with one of those? I think the I don't know what the difference is between those two. There's a difference, but...
Yeah, I think those folks would fall in that 16 to 64-year-old category with chronic medical conditions, and, you know, any kind of immune-compromising disease would be amongst those. You know, the more common, you know, diseases that we see probably chronically are diabetes, you know, heart disease, chronic lung disease, but, you know, anyone who's immunosuppressed would fall into that general category as well.
Yeah, so the immunosuppressed is if they take some medication or something that reduces their ability to fight off infections, right?
And sure.
That's okay.
Yeah, it could be a medicine that reduces your ability to fight off infections. We consider, you know, chronic dialysis or chronic kidney patients as immunosuppressed. People with HIV, AIDS, you know, would be immunosuppressed. People on cancer type therapy. So broad category of folks.
What about your local government employees? Is that going to be in a category, or are they just going to file in with their age group?
Yeah, no, they are in the category of the 1B essential employees. There's probably about an 8 or 10 tiers under that. And if you look on our website, it really spells it out nicely.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Frank, this is Butch Wells.
Yes, sir.
I can't answer your question or address your situation, but I can speak to what I shared at our last board meeting with our community. I happened to read one of the bulletins from the health department and saw the survey where you could register, and immediately filled one out for myself, and not only myself, for my wife. And within a matter of a day or two, we got a phone call signing us up for an appointment. Went and got our shots, and while we were there, they scheduled us for our second one. And kudos to Augusta Health on the way they handled it. It was very orderly. We were in and out in just a matter of 20 minutes. So that's how we got the appointment. Is we went through one of the health bulletins that Dr. Carnegie was mentioning.
Thank you, Butch. Any other questions for Dr. Carnegie? Butch, I'll pile on yours. Go ahead, Sateri.
Yeah, I have one quick question related to that 1C group. So for the next group, which is demonstrably larger than the 1B, what are your thoughts or concerns? And that's one, I think, as it starts to ramp up and, you know, the media and the news reports that you hear about the variants and the ability to spread at a much more rapid rate. My concern is that as we head into late winter, early spring, the cases are going to blossom. You've got a huge subset of folks lined up for 1C, huge demand for 1B, not great inventory. What do you sort of feel about our ability for a rural part of Virginia to acquire the amount of resources that are going to be necessary to vaccinate in 1C?
Yeah, I think if we have the inventory, we'll be well placed between what the health department can do, what the health systems within the district can do, and then efforts that the state will likely get stood up. They're looking at, high throughput regional efforts for vaccines. So I think as long as we have the inventory, I'm confident that we can get the vaccine out there. In terms of the variants, the thinking at this point is that the vaccine should be effective against any of those genetic variants. The mRNA vaccines produce immunity to a spike protein. The coronavirus looks like a crown. It's kind of a round virus that has little spikes off of its surface. And the mRNA vaccine produces immunity to those spikes. And in doing so, the vaccine, the virus cannot enter your cells and reproduce, so that those spike proteins are fairly stable, even if there's variation within the virus itself. So the thinking is that this vaccine should be effective. Even if we had to tweak the vaccine, it's much easier to take an established vaccine and modify it for a genetic variant, much like we do with the flu, than to start from scratch. So I think the authorities are pretty confident that, we're good going forward. One of the points that you bring up is a really important one to make, is that, we're going to need a lot of folks vaccinated in order to produce that herd immunity. And we still have community transmission, and likely we'll have community transmission, unfortunately, with some, strains that may be more transmissible. So it's vitally important that even amongst folks who have been fully vaccinated, that we continue with all of our same mitigation measures. We have to continue mask wearing, social distancing, hand washing, all of those things are going to need to continue for the foreseeable future, until we get to that point where we've developed, herd immunity as a population. So I know that's disappointing to a lot of folks. A lot of folks were hopeful that we could kind of return to a little more normal functioning, just right after you got the second vaccine. But all of those efforts really need to continue for the months to come.
Great. Just one other follow-up question. Thank you for that. It would be that as the vaccines start rolling in and our inventory starts, put a plug in for the idea of, it sounds like, from regional and multiple locations and, drive up, drive through sort of vaccination programs. But, I know largely the vaccination is held in Stanton, which is great, but I'm, concerned about those that folks that are not only vulnerable from maybe a health or exposure level, but also from an income, transportation, and a childcare perspective, and not being able to take time off of work or away from their kids to go get vaccination. So just to press that, it would be wonderful if we could do, city by city, region by region, community by community vaccinations, just kind of looking out for those that are at risk, but then also, may have some underlying issues that make it difficult for them to receive vaccination.
Right. And we're trying to stand up, you know, Augusta Health has been a wonderful partner for kind of that central part of our district. We're staying in Augusta Waynesboro. We've set up things in conjunction with Rockingham County at the Rockingham County Fairgrounds. We're out there on Saturday, and I think that's going to be a great ongoing site. We've also got a site at James Madison University that also comes with help from James Madison University, which will make that, you know, sustainable over the course of time. We're trying to develop a site in Rockbridge, kind of get a good venue going. And we're really blessed in our district to have three federally qualified health centers who are really good stewards within our communities. We have Rockbridge Area Health Center, HGHC, and then Highland Medical Center. So we've been kind of feeding vaccines to them, and they're getting efforts started, you know, within their communities. They're willing to, you know, vaccinate people, whether they're patients or not. So I think those are going to be three good partners. Likewise, Little Bath Community Hospital has been a great partner, you know, for that kind of segment of the state. And we've been helping them with efforts through the hospital, you know, so trying to, like I said, spread out, you know, amongst our very large district, a lot of efforts. We even have some, you know, small door-to-door type efforts and kind of targeted efforts that we've gotten started for vulnerable communities. We did in Stanton on Saturday in conjunction with Augusta Health, the Gypsy Hill Apartments, which is a large apartment building for low-income seniors. You know, who sometimes can't get out into big areas. So we've got a list of places that we're going, including some homeless shelters, et cetera, throughout the area. And I have a contract nurse who's been kind of going up and down the valley doing small group homes. I never realized, to be honest with you, that we have well over 1,000 group homes within our district. Some of them have, you know, 2 to 5 residents. So we've just had, she's been, you know, traveling, you know, place to place. She tries to group them in, you know, kind of groups of 10, and, you know, has been getting in there and helping with that. That's been, you know, time consuming, and it's certainly something that I don't think we're going to be able to, you know, accomplish alone, but the state pharmacist is actually looking at a statewide level, getting pharmacies such as CVS and Walgreens to help with those smaller homes. You know, CVS and Walgreens has been participating in the federal partnership for skilled nursing facilities and assisted living facilities, getting those folks done. But as they finish up that work, kind of getting them into these smaller houses, so that would definitely be force extenders for us as well. But we really like to, you know, I think one of our niches in public health is really meeting the needs of the underserved. So once we can get these large venues set up and, you know, get a little more manpower available for smaller places, getting out into our rural areas where transportation is an issue. We've also been working with Valley Program for Aging Services, who are great, you know, partners in terms of reaching the senior community. Their worry is that a lot of their Meals on Wheels participants who are kind of you know, not able really to leave their home and, you know, don't have a whole lot of family support, may not have good access to vaccines. So they're willing to kind of help us reach those somewhat homebound folks. So like I said, I think we're trying to leverage, I think, all of our partnerships to reach just everyone within all of our communities.
Yeah, thank you. Fairfax Hall kind of came to mind over here in Waynesboro as a potential site as well. So, yeah, thank you very much.
Sure.
Dr. Cordier, thanks for being with us and for leading the charge on this issue as well, while you're keeping the rest of the health district in needs of individuals within our districts and municipalities healthy and serving them. I know that work continues to go on. So you're an inspiration for folks like myself who think having a bad day or busy running the vaccination on pandemic is not an easy task. So thank you for your good work and hope we can catch up with our West Virginia brethren, get closer to 100% when you get the support that you need. But I see Adam waving. Adam, do you have a question?
I do. Thanks for noticing, Frank. Laura, if you are not the person that knows this answer, that's okay. And maybe this even isn't under your jurisdiction, but who at the Virginia Department of Health follows up on concerns about locations that are not following protocols set by the state for mask wearing and things like that? That business?
It's basically, it ends up filtering to our environmental health folks. So environmental health has been charged with enforcing the governor's executive orders. Mm-hmm. So we get those complaints in a variety of ways. There is an online complaint form, so we get them that way. People call us. A lot of the localities, you know, they'll file complaints sort of on your website. So they eventually get filtered to our environmental health staff, and they look into all of those complaints. You know, certainly our biggest public health tool, I think, is always education and information, you know, trying to reach out to places and tell them, you know, kind of what they need to do. And if that doesn't work, you know, we do have some enforcement authority, particularly over venues that we regulate, such as, you know, restaurants, et cetera.
Yeah, thank you. And another question, whose responsibility is it once an individual receives their first shot, how they get scheduled for the second dose? Like, what is that procedure?
Yeah, that's a great question. We try to schedule folks for the second shot before they leave after the first shot. So we just started using a new computer system, and we got to put this into action on Saturday. I got to see it work, called PrepMod. Which allows us to register people for first and second shots. It allows us to register the shot, and then the shot record is dropped into our vaccine information system. So we kind of have a permanent record of that vaccine administration. PrepMod allows us to register people during that 15-minute waiting period for their second shot, and it worked really well. Basically, my job was not as a vaccinator on Saturday, but it was kind of working the 15-minute wait crowd, who were all greater than 65. I had a little QR code on my phone, and I could link to their phone, and that would link them to a registration form for the second dose. And that actually worked really well. For folks who couldn't navigate the phone piece, we also had people with tablets there so they could kind of hang out for 15 minutes with us and, you know, proceed on to the registration desk, get a time and a place to get their second shot. The way our district is doing it, which seems to make as much logical sense as anything else, is you get your second shot wherever you got your first shot. The venue is going to be the same. You know, it'll just be, you know, 28 days from hence, and, you know, we will get people registered, you know, right at that that first shot opportunity. And it worked out, like I said, pretty well, because people have to be observed for 15 minutes, so they don't have much to do other than sit there. So it's a great opportunity to get them all queued up for their second shot.
Very good. Any other questions?
Yes. I have one. When the state takes over the registration for vaccines, will those who have already registered with their health district have to re-register with the state? Or will there be a transfer of data?
Right. What will happen, like I said, I think they're going to use basically the same format that we're using, and they'll just flow the data that they collect to us. So they'll divvy it up via health district and kind of dump that data up to us. When you enter into that REDCap survey, it's date and time stamped. So we're able to kind of have a little queue, and it's sort of, it allows you to sort the data much in the way that you would sort like an Excel spreadsheet. So all of the data that's in there, we can sort it, you know, any way we want to. It can be by, you know, area, by, you know, alphabetically, if we're trying to, you know, we're trying to develop lists. So, you know, that survey tool has been really useful, and I don't think people are going to see it. Hopefully will be seamless, since it should look very much like what we've had at the district level. So,
and will notifications, once the state takes it over, will the notifications be done in the same way they're done now with health district volunteers or employees, either calling or, as I understand, emailing? Mm-hmm. To set up your appointments?
Yeah, it'll be exactly the same. So that the PrepMod system kind of works on a link, and we send people the email link to register for the clinic. For folks who don't have internet or can't negotiate, you know, a computer, we do have the ability to register people over the phone. So if people call our health departments, our staff has a specific kind of registration for phone registrations that they can take the information and get people in the queue. And some of the localities have been helping us as well with doing phone registration for people who may not have internet access. So we certainly don't want lack of a computer to be a barrier to somebody getting the shot.
Okay, and final question. I've been asked this a lot and I don't know. When you are scheduled for a vaccination, do you first get a phone call and then the email link, or is it one or the other or both?
It's typically one or the other. So if you share the email, you will get an email link. If you are a call only person, you'll get called.
Okay.
The other thing we've been trying to do too for each of our clinic opportunities is, you know, we're trying to be as good as stewards as possible of this vaccine. And it comes in, you know, 10 dose vials. We try to be really mindful of trying to group people in kind of groups of 10, because once you puncture that vial, you only have a couple hours to use it. You can't restore the punctured vial. But we bring with us to the events, you know, some names of folks that we could call. And we got like over 10 people there on Saturday night who were kind enough to come out at like, you know, past 7 o'clock at night to get their vaccine. And they were incredibly grateful for the opportunity. But that way we can, you know, we can use each and every single dose.
Okay. Thank you. I've gotten a lot of questions on that. And I was like, well, I don't know. So I thought, what a great opportunity to ask you, and thank y'all for everything you're doing.
Oh yeah, no, thank you. Thank you all for all your support. We couldn't do it without the support of all of our localities, for sure.
Cornegay, again, thank you. And yes, it's tough to answer all the questions because the issues keep changing, and we look forward as things move at the speed of light and you all continue to pivot in support of our communities. And you are most welcome to stick with us for the remainder of our meeting, but if you want to depart, certainly understand. And again, greatly appreciate you being with us and your accessibility for all of our district.
Great, thank you. I think I'm gonna proceed on to my next meeting, but thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Yes.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Next item on our agenda is EDA CARES update. Elizabeth, good evening. Hi. Welcome.
Good evening. It's good to be with you tonight and to share an update on our EDA CARES work with you. We are about 6 months into this 2-year effort, which is supported by CARES funding through the Economic Development Administration. We are using those funds to assist the region with pandemic recovery and resiliency activities. This is an all hands on deck program for us, but our core team includes Rebecca, Nathan, Grace, Hunter, Rachel, Bonnie, and me. And we are centered on four tasks. The first is preparing a regional pandemic recovery and resiliency plan. And we have outlined the scope of work for this plan and have drafted an RFP. And the plan will take a close look at the pandemic's impact on our regional economy. It will evaluate our region's strengths and weaknesses that have become very apparent during the last 10 months and how we might address gaps to ensure a more resilient regional economy. The plan will also identify emerging business sectors, growth opportunities, and trends that our region may begin to see or even market going forward. We also want to incorporate all of the innovative ideas that our localities and economic development partners have used to respond very quickly to the impacts of the pandemic and look for ways to build on those strategies. This plan will tie into our regional hazard mitigation plan and also our comprehensive economic development strategy. So our next step is to finalize the scope of work and advertise for a consultant to complete all or certain parts of the plan. Our second task is coordinating recovery efforts. So during the last commission meeting, Grace showed the COVID-19 recovery dashboard that is on our CSPDC website. We've been tracking four data sets related to unemployment, sales tax revenue, and COVID cases. Soon we will be adding vaccination distribution data, so you will see a chart for that coming soon. We continue to post information on available grants, resources, webinars, and also regional news around the pandemic. So please check out that webpage, it's always changing. As Bonnie mentioned during her report, we are following the use of local CARES funding as well as other grants awarded through CARES. We continue to host the weekly Zoom meeting of the region's county administrators and city managers. And this time is valuable for discussing common issues and creative solutions. We are also organizing groups that are addressing specific problems or opportunities because of the pandemic. So later this month, CSPDC staff is hosting a Zoom roundtable to discuss possibilities around resident and talent attraction. So your local economic development, tourism, and chambers of commerce staff have been invited to this kickoff meeting. There is a conversation around telework and co-work opportunities happening as well. We are exploring how we might strengthen our region's ability to support teleworking jobs. We have completed an inventory of teleworking facilities, and more recently we have partnered with UVA and the Thomas Jefferson PDC to conduct a survey to determine the need for a co-working space in the Fishersville area. So you may have seen a press release on this. It was in the news later today. Our third task is providing technical assistance. One of the most important services the CSPDC provides is the identification of funding opportunities. We continue to do this as well as help with project development and grant writing, particularly for projects that are responding or preparing for the pandemic. So finally, technology. As many of you have already done, the CSPDC is researching how to outfit our Bright meeting room and the Shenandoah room here in our PDC office to expand our teleconferencing abilities. Thank you to Augusta County and Rockingham County for giving Nathan and Kimberly a tour of your meeting spaces and equipment. We are finalizing our needs and we should have equipment installed sometime soon. So Zoom and other platforms are here to stay. Knowing that Rachel, as our marketing coordinator, gathered information on best practices for digital engagement. So we will be getting this information out to a larger audience through presentations and our website. So between now and our April meeting, our EDA CARES team will be initiating the pandemic recovery and resiliency plan, adding the vaccination data to the dashboard, analyzing the demand for telework facilities in the region, hosting the rural attraction roundtable, selecting teleconferencing equipment, presenting digital engagement best practices, continuing to support the managers group as well as participating on the SAW task force, providing assistance to develop projects and to identify funding for them, and whatever else may come up between now and when we meet again. So that's a whole lot. If you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Any questions for Elizabeth? Certainly lots going on. Look forward to the progress in that planning. Excellent. Hearing no questions for Elizabeth, we'll jump on over to the Central Shenandoah Regional Wildlife Protection Plan update and Miss Rebecca Joyce.
Okay. Good evening, everybody. I tried to invite Smokey Bear, but he told me he doesn't do Zoom. So he does bless this plan, but he wasn't able to attend, so I apologize. We recently finished our Central Shenandoah Regional Wildfire Protection Plan, and I just wanted to give you all a quick update of that, and it will be rolled into our Hazard Mitigation Plan. So just wanted to also let you know about that. A few years ago, we received a grant from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to do the plan. In the western part of the United States, community wildfire protection plans, or CWPPs, are very popular, and a lot of communities have them. Here on the East Coast, they're not very many communities that have them, and in Virginia, we're one of the few areas that has any. We decided that we wanted to do a regional plan after assisting Augusta County with their community wildfire protection plan. We felt like it would be a good chance to do an overview at a regional level of the wildfire risks and issues we have that may help the other localities in the future as far as that goes. The plan was developed with local government staff. We had representatives from state and federal agencies. We had people that live in woodland communities and then other wildfire professionals that attended the meeting. So they really helped with the planning process. We also did some public engagement activities and got public input, and that's incorporated into the plan as well. You all have in your packets a resolution that Bonnie went ahead and signed in January. That was because our grant funding, they wanted to close out the project and needed a resolution. The plan will be incorporated in the hazard mitigation plan as an annex, and you all this spring will be getting at the boards of supervisors, city and town council meetings, a chance to adopt the hazard mitigation plan, and we'll adopt this plan as well. So the plan will be available on our website with the hazard mitigation plan this spring. I'm happy to give anybody a link to it in Dropbox if they'd like to look at it before then. The one thing I just want to reassure all our local governments with, because it's always a question, the plan has mitigation strategies and mentions wildfire risk and how to help in our wildland urban interface areas, but there's no obligation for any of our localities as far as financial obligations. So you don't have to, there's no recommendations with funding attached or anything like this. This is a very high level overview plan and really is more about what the wildfire risk is and ways that communities can reduce or eliminate that. So I just want to pass that on to you all. Just any questions anyone has, I'm glad to answer those.
Thank you, Rebecca. Yes, a best practices of how to stay safe with fire, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Anyone have any questions? Yes, Laura.
Yes, thank you for that. I appreciate that you're watching out for the wildfires. Recently in our area, we've had a series of different kinds of blights on the trees, the hemlocks and then the ash. And I wonder if you take that into account in your wildfire studies.
We did not. And we also have not in the hazard mitigation plan, but that may be something that we do need to consider. And I will make note of that so that we can look more into that. So I appreciate you mentioning that. That is something, yes, I know, particularly with the hemlocks and, of course, the elms, those were such big things. So thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you, Laura. Any other questions for Rebecca? Did you need action on this resolution, Bonnie?
I think we're okay.
We are okay, Rebecca?
Yes, I think we're okay.
Okay. Because Rebecca says we're okay.
Yes, you all will adopt it individually.
I signed on your behalf.
Yes, unless anyone has any problems. But again, you all will adopt this incorporated into the hazard mitigation resolution that you all will see at your boards of supervisors and council meetings.
I can assure you no one on this Zoom call has any problems at all. Just kidding.
Oh, great. Great.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Our next item on the agenda is a smart scale application update from Ms. Ann Cundy. And sorry, Ann, you can't make your presentation till you do some splaining. It looked like you had a special bracelet of some sort on. And just curious what
activity. Pitting an avocado got the better of me. So I had to have a nerve in my hand repaired on Friday as a result. So,
well, thank you for being with us, and I hope you have a speedy recovery.
Thank you. Let me be a lesson to all of you to pit your avocado on a cutting board.
I thought maybe you had a sleigh riding accident.
I wish it was that fun. Yeah. But
you're never going to eat guacamole again.
Well, yeah, I definitely don't want to be anywhere near an avocado anytime soon. But in happier news, our region did tremendously well in the staff recommended funding scenario for Smart Scale. So for anybody who is not familiar, Smart Scale is the state's main competitive program for funding large-scale transportation projects. And we put in 21 applications, and that is the PDC, SAW MPO, Harrisonburg, Rockingham MPO, and all of our member localities. So collectively, we submitted 21 applications, and in the draft funding scenario, which was enclosed in your packet, we are proposed to have 16 of those projects funded. That is incredible. So that speaks not just to the fact that Smart Scale had a decent amount of funding available for it this year, but also to the quality of those applications. And that's not just tooting the horn of the PDC or the MPOs, but all of your local staff, our VDOT Stanton District Planning staff, Terry, Brad Reed, and Adam Campbell. I think one of the things that maybe I didn't perceive about Smart Scale when it first started, but have really come to experience, especially in the last two rounds, is the incredible amount of coordination, strategy, and advanced planning that goes into putting these applications together, really thinking about how to study projects that are going to lead to strong applications, and then think collaboratively about the best way to put those applications together to get projects funded. So, you know, making sure that we are going to get a BRITE bus stop set of pedestrian improvements covered by way of BRITE or a Waynesboro application or an MPO application, just really trying to maximize our opportunities and put together really competitive applications. So if you see them over Zoom or in person, give your local planning staff a pat on the back. The same to Terry and his team. It was just a really, really exciting day when we saw this proposed scenario be presented to the CTB a couple of weeks ago. So very happy to share that with you. It's not final until June when the Commonwealth Transportation Board adopts the six-year improvement program, but it's rare that a project recommended for funding gets taken off. So it's good news. And that's all I have.
Thank you. And any questions for Ann on the Smart Scale and the projects being proposed or nearly approved? I was just curious, one, Ann, the BRITE pedestrian improvements, where is that geographically?
That's a package application. So again, that's one where we really try to be strategic. So we put in three separate sites in the BRITE service area. One in Waynesboro and two county, one at US 250 in Sanger's Lane. So just over the city county line from Stanton, right there at 81 exit 222. The other is in Verona at Dick Huff Lane, the entrance to the government center. All of those are bus stops that have high boarding and alighting and a pretty high need for passengers to cross a busy four-lane state highway in all three of those cases, be it 250 or US 11, to access a destination or another bus stop. So each of those is a little bit of sidewalk, a new crosswalk with the countdown heads, a landing place, a pad for an actual bus shelter. So really looking at some stops that have high activity, and also in places where it can be really challenging to be a pedestrian. And thankfully, that package application of all three was funded. So,
and am I reading that correctly? $4 million plus?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, they're all, upwards of two.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions for Ann? Hearing none, next we have the consideration of resolution authorizing the application for state and local aid for rideshare. Ms. Devin.
Yes, thank you and good evening, everyone. So staff is seeking commission endorsement for the attached resolution authorizing the application for state and local aid for rideshare. This resolution recognizes and acknowledges the cost share for the Central Shenandoah Rideshare Program's FY22 grant application. The Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation, DRPT, has a share of $70,000, which is 80%, and the CSPDC share of $19,000 is the 20% match for a total application request of $95,000. To remind you all, the principal goal of the CSPDC rideshare program is engagement, marketing, and outreach focused on ride sharing, the use of alternative transportation modes like walking, biking, and transit, and other commuter assistance program activities to individuals that reside and work in the CSPDC district. These funds will be used to market the program and for subsequent outreach events and marketing campaigns throughout the fiscal year. And we will be continuing our partnership with the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission, our sister agency on the other side of Afton Mountain, in providing this program as we've been doing for the past decade. So if you all have any questions about rideshare or the resolution, I can answer those.
Thank you, Devin. Members of the commission have any questions for Devin on this particular project? If not, I'd welcome your consideration. Mr. Lewis, you're suspiciously quiet.
Make a motion for approval.
And a second.
Gary and Jay Lewis with the second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approval signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Devin, spend well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you bringing that. Any council members have any other business to bring before us this evening? Hearing none, I'll just, like Bonnie started with her report, I miss seeing everyone in person. I miss Brenda's good cooking and look forward to the day that we can get back together. It sounds like June or July before we'll all be vaccinated. We'll take it as it comes. And I greatly appreciate everyone taking the time to be on the call today. Again, a special welcome to Laura. Look forward to your contributions in the future. On the lighter side of things, just wanted to make a couple observations or prizes from the chairman. Terry Short for best picture when you're absent. Good looking there with your blue jacket on. Billy Fitzgerald, you get the Cat Friendly Award. Glad your cat could join us and is taking residence in the frying pan. And Leslie, you win most patriotic with the Virginia state flag. So thank you for flying the state flag high and proudly. So, but I hope that you all have a beautiful evening, a great February. And unless there's anything else, last call. Hearing nothing, Rita will unplug us and have a beautiful evening. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Have a good night.
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 Night.